What's up, party people, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast Dance Specific Talks, released from Be Fit Essential. I'm Therese Salin, aka Teaser. Now, we are moving to Eindhoven in the Netherlands, where we are interviewing one of the founders of Open Your Mind, an experimental competition that brings artists together from all over the world. He is a b-boy, experimental dancer, and artistic director, and we are so honored to have on this show no one else than Drosha. So what do you need to know about Drosha? Well, he was born and raised in Russia, previously Soviet Union. Later on, he moved to the Netherlands, and the rest is history. He has not only been winning Just the Boo Experimental 2012, but also been competing in a lot of breaking battles, experimental battles, creating events, and becoming an artistic director. Today, Drosha is running Open Your Mind together with other founders, which is a conceptual and experimental competition. Drosha has had some really big challenges and victories in his dance career so far, and we're gonna hear all about it. Now, you already know what to do. You can rate, comment, share, and subscribe to our podcast on all the podcast platforms. If you're watching a video, don't forget we are on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. And you are, of course, welcome to share your favorite episode with your friends, because we want more dancers to join the tribe of real dancers telling real stories. Now, let's get it going. Drosha! Pa 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 pa!
Straight from Utrecht somewhere. Oh,
but you represent Eindhoven wherever you are, though.
Normally I'm from Eindhoven. I'm from Rostov-on-Don, which is in Russia, but live in Eindhoven, which is in the Netherlands. But broadcasting to you from Utrecht, which is in the Netherlands. And that's basically how my life is.
I do have to announce that we have to congratulate you because you turned 40 very recently. Ooh.
Shh, don't tell it to anybody. Just hush, hush, so they don't listen. Yeah, I just turned 40 in exactly a month. It's what we're recording, it's exactly a month ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. New decade, feeling more rusty than ever.
Well, I think that you're carrying more wisdom and the burden is getting heavier. That's kind of how I see it, you know?
It's all here, my wisdom.
And I'm turning 30, like, right soon, in a couple of days. So I kind of wonder, what advice would you give people like me, my fellow 1990 children, that are 10 years younger than you?
Oh, Lord. There we go. You like break the ice immediately with the advices. Look, it's going to be better every decade. That's the best thing. At least I realize that actually my life is getting, even though it's more painful, like literally, I don't mean figuratively, my body's becoming less and less, so I have to work harder to keep it in shape. But somehow getting aged like a good wine is good. Like, it's very good. I don't mind. I have there's this stereotype of forever young, and everybody who's 25 is so much stressed. Oh my God, I'm 30. And they all make jokes, but they actually mean them, because everybody wants to stay 25 forever. I'm probably one of the few people that don't have this trouble. I love it. I love getting old. I want to become an old grandpa, you know, working on my belly. So by the time I'm 80, I'm like bigger and I can have my grandkids and, read them fairy tales. I'm very crazy. I don't even, you see my beard, there's all natural whiteness in there.
Ooh.
I don't color it.
Mm. I see the silver strings of wisdom coming through.
Let it come. Just let the age come. It's good. You lose something, you get something completely different. And I guess what you get is peace. That's what I hope for. Peace is so much more valuable than good joints or functioning elbows.
Because that was my next question. Like, looking back, I kind of want to give this interview the theme of like reflecting of life and decades. And what would you say be the biggest difference going from 30 to 40 compared to 20 to 30?
Well, let's first of all think, like, you kind of make me older than I am. Like 40 is still quite young.
Absolutely.
When you ask this, like, can you reflect back on the decades? Going 30 to 40, I don't even understand completely what happened. That's for real. So much happened in my life between 30 and 40. It's like the most moved decade. Because remember, before, you're a student, you study. Like, first you go through all these necessary stages of life, right? You have this childhood, and then you go to youth, and we're almost all of us follow the same path. So 20 to 30 was pretty much, how do I get out of my education and get hold of the real life, only to realize that it gets better. So actually, on the opposite of all the cliches, which I hear, like, you know, they're very popular in the millennial circles, like, I don't want to get a job, and what's success? Is success about money, titles? Actually, I enjoyed all of it. I'm divorced, but I had a 18-year-long relationship, and I have two kids, and I have quite an established career. I've won a lot of awards. I mean, I could consider myself quite successful as a dancer, going from that period of 20, going to school, like studying design, industrial design. That's what I did. But having already some dance career as a, you know, hip hop breaker, popper and stuff. And that transition was trying to get hold of that. So it was a little bit scary, you know, when you just finish your school. But then going for 30 to 40, you have to realize that I won Juste Boo at 32. That's old. That's actually, you know, not your standard. And then a year later, I won a Royal Award for my art. So for my choreography, it's kind of the first hip hopper in the Netherlands. And that was, yeah, pow, pow, pow. That all went very fast. So somehow, before, my dance style was awkward and weird, and people didn't really understand it, and it kind of had some reputation, but I was the guy to lose the finals, right? Then when I came older, 30 to 40, I had a lot of successes as a dancer, as a established artist, let's say, right? I invited to companies, started my own company, and that really, like, you know, having direction roles, having being artistic director of Open Your Mind, it all came from 30 to 40. So it's great, like, winning Juste Boo, being part of the experimental community, realizing that experimental community is really empty, there's nothing. So I started organizing stuff. So it was like, okay, making theater, diving into this art, dance art, traveling the world. It all happened in this one decade, which only finished like last month.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's like, you know, to hear you say that gives me so much hope and motivation and inspiration to just keep going. Because I think that what comes with age is that lack of, like, it seeking for approval. And like, that kind of makes you also, or at least I hope that I'm also in a process of pivoting in my art, because that age thing of caring too much about other people's opinions kind of hopefully fades off. So by you saying this, you give me such a good feeling. I feel greater now, turning 30.
Let's go. Yeah, let's go. Look, it's so valuable. You're absolutely right. When it comes to like this the 20s, it's all about hormones. Still, you know, you go into 20s, it's all about hormones, all about love and social relationship and awkwardnesses. And, you know, your body and your mind are still growing, and it's all part of it. I remember now back with the younger, the more chaotic and scary and weird and girls failures in private relationships. And now it's all, you know, at one point it's not a problem. All those things fade away. And that's beautiful. Still, I mean, it's not all, you know, it's not all that easy. I also paid a price also between the age of 30 and 40. So this last decade was not all super easy. Don't get me twisted. I would be lying that I would say, look, I can smile on the podcast and telling you all these beautiful stories of successes and victories and whatnot. One, they're not that big. I don't think they're so significant. I'm not Michael Jackson or, you know, somebody like Litwins or something that have a huge following. I have my own like little niche. And the other, they were very hard. Yeah. Very. I had to work so hard that I paid almost the ultimate price.
Yeah, and we're going to come into that because I think that we need to discuss that topic. But in order for like people to kind of get also me, since I only recently get to know you, I mean, all I know is that you're this b-boy experimental dancer that somehow became the art director of like multiple companies, organizations, events. And the first thing that comes to my mind is like, what the hell happened? You know, why don't you take us back to what kind of formed you in the beginning and how this thrive and passion came to be in your life?
Well, look well at my eyes. They're always black around here. This just, I guess, let's say that's just something that workaholics like me always have, right? And I mean, part of it, I guess it's unexplainable. I'm born with this super hard wish to get to know and understand things, right? So this is the kind of a story of my life. As a Soviet student and as a kid, everybody used to say, oh, Andrusha, because it's like Russian, it's nice. Andrei. And I'm Andrei Grekhov with nickname Drosha. So most people in dance know me as Drosha, but I'm actually Andrei. When it's like you're a nice, cute boy, Andrei, it's Andrusha. Like all I remember is that old people saying to me that I'm such a genius. It's something that I did from the youngest age. And it's not something like I never did tests or IQ. Even though it was contraintuitive because I sucked at school. I always sucked at school. And the teachers thought there's something special with this boy and he's very gifted, blah, blah, blah. But it was shit. I would hope they would never do this because I never experienced it as any kind of help. Like, why am I getting bad remarks while people say I'm so smart? But I have always been smart. And I guess my talent would be not even dancing per se, having this super dense body and intelligence, but being able to understand things. I consider myself a scholar, that's for sure. So I'm constantly learning, reading. I read three languages. I mix between literature, stupid literature, fantasy, science fiction, non-literature, non-fiction. I'm insatiable like that. And that also meant that I kind of also curious, can I be more than I am? I don't want to sound too hippie-ish because I'm not, but I am a little bit of hippie. It's okay. Why can I can try to organize a battle, and then I organize a lot of battles, and then I become good at it. And then I say, okay, theater, that's a cool thing. Let me try it out. And I try it out. So there's this very curious exploration that I'm just, okay, I like it. I go for it. And then I work harder than everybody else.
Then I kind of want to ask you then, like, for me, the little I know about what it might be to grow up in Soviet Union, was your hunger for knowledge and like seeking and exploring sometimes clashing with restrictions of information or restriction of music, etc., when you grew up? Was it a problematic as well?
Wow. Well, that's a deep question, Teresa. You drop a bomb there. Okay. First, I think I need to say that I was quite young. I moved from Russia at the age of 14, but I lived in Soviet Union until 10 or 11. Then the revolution came and the whole country switched from like this more or less totalitarian state to more free. And I only know of this totalitarian part from the stories of my parents and my grandparents. So my grandparents all really suffered. They all were jailed by communists because of whatever thing they do, but they were all political prisoners. And the fact that my family lives in the West is partly because they kind of took their legacy of their parents or my grandparents, which were all even dead almost before I was like 5 or 6 years old. That's how hard their lives were, going through revolution, the Second World War, which hit Russia really hard. I think there's not a country, maybe outside Germany itself, that has been destroyed and like twisted by a Second World War than Soviet Union. And so no, I was too young to get it. I remember it as a great time, really adventurous and funky, and this whole revolution was actually a breaking down of the country, but I was just running from ruin to ruin. As a kid, you're like free, and one day you have to wear a Soviet uniform, and the other day my mother say, you're not going to wear it anymore, and I'm like, sure. But you know, it was their struggle much more than mine. And my parents always try to, like, the thing they gave me, I think it maybe 6th or 7th birthday, my father brought a complete encyclopedia of animals. And I remember myself. So they put those books on the lower shelf. So as a 6-year or 7-year-old kid, or even 5-year-old, I don't remember exactly, I could get those books and I went through pictures of spiders and fish and bird. And I did it so often. I just remember myself every time, I don't know, like this cold Russian winter, and I'm just sitting in the on the floor going through, you know, animals, the pictures of sharks. And then I learned to read, and I could read what sharks there were. And it never let me go. The only thing I really failed at is somehow use it at school. Because the school sucks. Whether it's Soviet Union or Dutch school, it always sucked. Even Design Academy, my education sucked. I was almost kicked out several times. So.
That is so crazy, because I can really relate to that. I remember also sitting in my cold country, and every time we had a school assignment or even after school, I would sit and watch Animal Planet, and it was like all in English. I didn't understand anything, but I just like wanted to see all these animals, and I always picked the most exotic one, you know, like the one far away in Papua New Guinea or somewhere, because I just was like so hungry of, you know, what's out there, how can I learn more? So I completely get you. This is so interesting. So now, how did dance then come into your life? What was like your first memory of dance?
That would be watching Michael Jackson. And that's an interesting story, because I could only watch Michael Jackson because my mother was, I think, one of the first people that ever started to travel between Soviet Union, like in our social bubble right there, to the West. And it was, I don't know, curiosity. And my parents are really like adventurous. They always wanted to move to the West somehow. The Jewish part of our family, because I'm like on my mother's side, I'm Jewish, they all moved out already in the 70s. So I have family that live in Israel, in New York. I have aunts I never met. I just know they exist. And uncles I have in Italy and Germany. But all the Jews, they went out. So I guess they followed that adventurous spirit. But she went back with the VHS tapes of, believe it or not, it was just MTV. and music box. So wherever they were in hotel rooms, I don't know how they get it. I have to ask it one time. I just remember they get them. And I had 3 hours of MTV, VHS tapes. And it's watching that. That's it. And I was on the carpet moving. And I don't know, something, those stories I don't even remember. I know them from my mother. I was dancing from very, very, very young age. And it went to the school. And at school, I was always the best in the class. And when you're the best in the class, it's like, hey, Andre, you go. And there's this school party. I had to dance, and I was always like the star. And then it was, I guess, in the for dance community, it would be copying Michael Jackson, doing MC Hammer moves. Because remember, I'm 40, so I was, it's 88, 89, 80. Then at those times, 88, 89, 90, Soviet Union was opening up. So my mother didn't have to bring tapes. We had this piracy channels, like, and in between we could see artists perform. And then, of course, what also happened is that the first Russian pop artist copied Americans. So we had a knockoff MC Hammer and a knockoff Vanilla Ice, and they all did hype moves. Let's say old school dictionary hip hop, and that's where I come from. And we like literally lived in the Soviet style blocks. So I always could relate later on when I learned how hip hop has existed in Bronx. I like, shit, it's like fucking Rostov on the Don, sorry for my language, where all the kids were down and took the stereo. And because of the Soviet revolution, there was an empty building and we squatted it, like kids, 12, 13 year old kids. We squatted it, and we had even a gang that has been called in English Warhawks. And we danced and boxed and kissed girls and stole vodka from parents to drink it. So it was super, but I remember it like fun. And you know, the guys from there, I still have contact. Now they're like judges. Like a lot of my friends became big, respected names. But I'm like, yeah, I remember. I remember when we were like 12, 13 years old, the whole world was getting to shit. And we just danced and, you know, and tried to act really tough. And I guess that's how I connect to hip hop really fast. One of the first things one of my friends did is bring Ice-T tape on Snoop Dogg. And oh. I was listening, I was learning English. And he brings this song, and Ice-T goes like, if you're listening to this tape, I don't remember the song exactly, but it's a very famous song. Are you offended by words like fuck, shit, bitch? And like, we were like, what? Do they say this like out loud? And we started to listen to hip hop, ask my mother to buy me baggy clothes. And then somewhere around this time, we moved to the Netherlands. And of course, that was like, we have a store where you can buy woo-wear. And I bought Source magazine, Source. I don't know if you ever read. And the Source magazine, so people that are a little bit older, they will relate. It had articles about Rocksteady Crew. And I copied the phrases from the from these articles. Met by chance other B-boys in the area. And then the rest is history. The rest is not that interesting. Then it's all more or less organic. Went into breaking, into popping, met another dancers, got inspired. But the like very first steps, imagine that, Teresa, imagine that. I had to watch a photography of the article when there was a baby freeze, because there was nothing, no YouTube, no explanations, no, like I'm living as one of the, I guess I was the only immigrant in the whole neighborhood. Like kids went to our house to watch and look at me. And it was very nice because they invited me to play. And I said, oh, we heard there's a Russian kid here. And I'm like, okay, cool, let's go. But then there was nothing hip-hop-ish at all. There were hubbers, like hard style. Dum, dum, dum. You know, the very like popular, yeah, typical, yeah. Dutch hardcore. And yes, yeah, somehow, yeah, like. Dum, dum,
dum. And, I was like,
and I was like, do you like Wu-Tang? And then what? Notorious B.I.G. And so I had to look. It was a cool time, very adventurous. And everything we did was wrong, but it was so beautiful.
I think that that is one of the most beautiful things with hip-hop culture in general. No wonder it's one of the most influential genres of all times, because I think that what you just described is so beautiful, how you could watch a culture somewhere on the other side of the earth and feeling connected and feeling like you can look at people that have the same reality and see that you have a community and that you want to be a part of that. I think that that's so beautiful and such a very clear example of how culture can change people's lives, you know? It's such a beautiful thing.
I think that even I could like take it a little bit further, that I think that Russian culture by itself is very, very well connected to America. Like imagine that there was not a, that's why I think a lot of B-boys, super top tier B-boys are from there, like Ukraine and Russia. There's same hunt to materialistic search for new identity, a high level of criminalization, a high level of corruption. Look, I grew up literally in the same kind of environment. It's not exactly the same. I can't say that, you know, Bronx or LA is the same like Rostov or Moscow, but there are parts that are fucking the same. Mm. Just as dangerous, just as socially deprived, socially backward, you know. And that, of course, kids there immediately relate to hip-hop. And my father and mother made me study English from 6 years old. So I could understand the lyrics very fast. So all my other, like, it's here. It's not even here. It goes straight to your heart.
Yeah.
Of course. So I can imagine every young man and young woman less, but I think now it's more. Before it was really young, angry, unhurt, aggressive boys becoming men could relate and can relate in hip-hop, in rap, in violence that's not real violence, in breaking and crumping and other styles that you kind of have to fight in.
Yeah,
that was the way for me to get my aggression, to somehow find identity of a, I'm a Russian Jewish kid in the Netherlands, like with no other Russians. Still, it's a very small group. And how do you find your identity? Ah, there, I have music.
Yeah.
It was not even dance. Only when, I remember when at the high school where I was, there were, I think, about 2,000 students, but only 4 or 5 immigrants. Imagine the world. So I had to step up the game and break some fingers, almost literal, to fight off the discrimination, yeah, which made my character not crying, not complaining, but I had to step up the game. But when they've seen me dance on the first parties, it was like this.
Yeah,
it was immediate. Way of accepting, because yeah, that's so beautiful on it. I was like, I don't know, something like waving, and all the farmers are watching me like, oh, Andre, we didn't even know you could do this.
Yeah.
And then I come back after this party back to the school, and everybody's like, yo, you're kind of cool. And that was it's a true story. It's like a rehabilitation. But then also through this dance, I saw other people. Oh. And they say, do you break? Let's go together to this little cafe in Eindhoven where you can also break because there are 2 other breakers. And then you find out there's like a super secret spot somewhere in the back of the city where there are like 10 breakers.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course. It's just magic.
It is. And like, so you started with the breaking, like many also people that started with hip hop, most of the time started with the style of breaking because that's the original style. How did you navigate through what you wanted to do with dancing? Like, what was your compass within dancing? What did your heart and body and soul felt for? Was it always like the aggressive, like, type of expressions, or was it something else as well that kept motivating you to grow?
No, you made me go back in time. Look, I think first it was aggression and expression, because the dance, we were not busy dancing. And I know this also true for a lot of my generation and older. You know, come on, I was hanging on the street very fast. I found in Netherlands the same people like me. So I went from Russia to the Netherlands, and in a couple of years, hanging on the street, smoking, drinking beer, listening to Wu-Tang and Mobb Deep and Tupac and Biggie. And then we danced, right? So that was the expression. Then there were illegal hip-hop parties where we could attend, because there was not really the mainstream there. And there you had like 10 minutes or 15 minutes for the B-boys, and you enter. There's no conscious step of doing it. It was all subconscious, just relate to it. Some related to the mic, some related to writing graffiti. I related to break. Later on, first videotapes started going on from the US, freestyle sessions and all kinds of battles, like copied of copies. And then I understood from, whoa, but I like the weirdest guys the most. So, okay, you had the champions and the best ones, but somewhere along the ride, I've seen the most authentic, kind of quirky, not real, not the best ones. And I slowly related to that. And now a lot of them are my comrades. That's so weird. Like, first I watched their tapes and they were like heroes, and then like Storm and Midas and Mr. Wiggles. And they were like not so much about, groundbreaking champions, but more about very innovative dancers. So immediately I had this feeling I have to innovate. I have to bring my own part, not just the word of it. And it became a lifetime goal. Like, I'd rather lose and try to understand what to do. So it's a long, long road, very long road to, like I said, like Juste Boo Paris experimental was 2012. I was 32 years old, and only then kind of the mainstream thought, whoa, Mr. Drosha, that's something really nice you do. Mm. And then the people that said, like, yeah, he's kind of cool, but you know, he misses power moves, and they were like, yeah, bravo. So yeah. I needed a real victory for everybody to say, oh yeah, bravo, he's such a nice artist. And I'm like, just 6 months ago you went through me. And now suddenly you're kind of this, oh, you're a hero and such an example for everybody else, because you do your thing and nothing else than that. And that's the struggle that you are in. And then after that, going into my 40s, like I completed that mission. I have the feeling that mission is done. I'm not chasing innovation anymore. I'm not trying to, bend the styles, bring in some version of that's done. So that's the Drosha, my nickname. It's good, and I'm very proud of it. Only last years I'm very proud of it. When you're in it, it's a struggle. It's yeah. Pain, it's hurting, it's trying, it's failing, it's trying again. Yeah,
it's so crazy, because I remember when experimental, I was at Juste Boo for the first time. I think it was 2011. And I remember when like these experimentals started to come around that time, and I also started to enter. My proudest moment was like becoming top 8 of Juste Boo Nordic, which I was super happy about, because finally I had a category where I could mix all my styles, from whacking, from dancehall, from hip hop, and I could just do my thing. So that freedom, I really appreciated that. And also to see all these very, very different dancers coming together in the same category. So we're also going to come back to that, because I know you are running some current projects about this as well. Let's take that a little bit further on, because I also know that you have like been developing your style, you've been bringing in this unique elements, but you also have kept feeding your thought diet with like the nerdy stuff and all of that. Have you seen the parallel of getting inspired from things that you learn that is not necessarily dance and bringing that into dance? Or how have you kept your inspiration up for so many years?
Oh, that's a never-ending process. That will be the last thing that happens before I die, for sure. I will be keep feeding. It's like a hunger. It's like a hole that is never filled. I guess nobody that reads a lot and studies a lot is ever done doing that, right? But let's say like this. Now this is a little bit more complex to explain. So at one point, I kind of accepted that I'm going to follow the critical thinking way. So I have a big love for sciences and scientific methods and the way. And I learned it in the very fun stuff. I never studied science. But I, you know, I was watching Discovery when I was a kid a lot, and National Geographic. Then, you know, something like a documentary falls on my doorstep. Then internet age came up. And then I was, I don't know, sometimes watching first YouTube specials or reading newspapers. And I subscribed to a couple of journals like Quest and Science Journal, not the big science journal. So I had this feeding, you know. Then later on, I started reading more serious books, and it covered like the whole spectrum. I went to scientific history and philosophy. I wanted to understand why are scientists looking at things like that, or why are things? So it's always why? And it came because I've seen a UFO once, and I'm shitting you not. I was in Russia, and me and 100 other people were looking at the sky, and we've seen a UFO. So before, I still don't know what it was, but I went that trope really deep. Before my 16th, I went through all the Roswell stories, and I was like obsessed. But when I grew older, I started reading other books and other perspective, I got this more broader spectrum of how the reality looks like, right? And where is it a conspiracy, or where is it like reality? When there is a trouble and a problem, what's the real of the problem? And I touched it as a student. I studied media ecology. So it means that, let's say about 2007, 8, and 9, there was my minor. My minor was about how does media behave itself. And of course, I learned more. So this, and then you ask yourself, how does it relate to dance? Well, I was striving, right, to be empirically different. Not just because everybody says they're original. And I was like, how can we measure that? How can I? So I was trying to add on empiricism, meaning that if somebody else tells me, oh, that's a nice move, you did this. I went on in history and started to look. And if I found somebody who did it, I rejected the idea that I made. So that's really like my internal process. I said, no, I didn't make it. Because this is the illusion that every dancer has that freestyles. I coach so many kids and so many, even, you know, quite renowned dancers on there. Because they say, yeah, I'm original. I made this up. I made that up. I said, wait.
Yeah, study.
You see this, 1988 or 1977. And that's how I went accidentally into dance history study. I went back and back, and I even did seven years ago, like an edit on YouTube of all the styles behind, one behind the other, going from the 30s and 20s. I did it methodically. I was looking for moves. So at this point, I can even tell you exactly, show you. I have like maybe 4 or 5 that I empirically, and then I'm still doubting because, you know, I should have a whole bunch of students going through all the footage ever made, saying that those things are really mine. And by that, my addition, not my innovation, but my addition, because I know I inspired it from this person and that person. And that's like, that would help me out. Being a nerd, being analytical, helped me out. By the time I went on the stage in 2012, I did a couple of things, especially if you, I don't know if you will put the edit of it, because it's, I guess it's online, where I'm sitting on my ass spinning, like kind of the spinning machine with my hands behind. Like those things, I was looking like, what's really, and it made me realize that you really have to dare to be really stupid with this. If you're looking too much to like foundation, then everybody will look like each other. If you really go for it, you go for the awkward, stupid, weird, coming from different ways, and visualizing content differently. But as a style, this was my research. Every practice session, battles, I watched myself compared to others. Thought, okay, no, I look like too much. Like maybe this movement is too much. Like it's been done too much. I skip it. And that made, at one point, this process resulted in what I did. And it's not for everybody. It's an acquired taste. It's not for everybody.
No, but I think that that is also, I mean, you and me have been talking a little bit about branding and those type of things too, but it's literally like, where are you filling the gap? And what are you at? You know, what is your addition to this culture and to this type of styles and movements? So it is, you know, I don't think that I have ever thought about my dancing in that way, which is very, very interesting, because I have been in styles where you need to learn the moves and be respectful for the creators and kind of then adding your flavor to it. But this is a very interesting topic. Like what gap are you filling, and what kind of unique infusion are you bringing to the table in order for the styles to grow?
If it's your thing, look, a lot of dancers are there to be part of a great social family.
Yeah.
Look, even though I would suggest officially when you and I are not from the same subculture, right? I would love to think we are one big, let's call it urban dance for now, because other definitions are kind of not good. Is it all street dance? Or is it all hip hop? No. Is it all funk styles? No. But we have, you know, Afro-oriented. I would like to say every urban style, like non-academical, is one big family, because in the end, we all relate. We have kind of all the same values. What you say is the same with break and popping. Like, it's not that I neglected foundation. I teach foundation, or I taught. I don't teach anymore. But I used to teach a lot of, you know, the right vocabulary. I used to learn it. I went in booking a lot of teachers at my own projects from USA, from Korea, from whatever they should come to get the right kind of knowledge. And then what I do as a coach and teacher, I learn to completely destroy it in the end. And that's the right, right, the right way to go. Like, this is what you do. I can credit every teacher that I ever had, like Storm, Bowen, Mr. Wiggles, Midas, and who else we have? I was very much inspired by Salah, then David Elsewhere from the D2 tapes, and I can keep going. Tony, John. And that's the thing I am supposed to do. Everybody in my culture is supposed to do that. If you interview them, start dropping names of who were the people that taught them, who were their inspirators. And then we're not so good at hip hop, and then learning how do you become you more, right? How do you do that? That becomes much bigger trouble. Yeah. And that's kind of where I stepped in with my artistic analytical way. And then I started teaching in academies, studying and going into theater, and find out that, whoa, those people are already in the next century when it comes to artistic methods and when it comes to conceptualizing. And I could understand all of it because I did art school, right? So the transition was easy. Transition was not that bad. And then still, there's nothing wrong, I suppose, in every freestyle style to go on, learn your foundation, and then kill it.
Yeah.
Take a gun and say, bam, because it's already in your body anyway. And you will always see, look, you know your styles. You will always see a person who owns it and then builds something on it, or who doesn't own it. And the ones that don't understand it will fail anyway. It's like impossible. They will maybe make something new or different, but it will never be that what you're looking for.
I want to give a big shout out to this week's sponsors called Open Your Mind Festival. This is an international experimental dance platform with editions all over the world. Open Your Mind transforms battles into theater and features the most creative and artistic dancers out there. So why don't you go and hit up their page right now called oym.event to follow Open Your Mind as they are posting events and you can get your daily doses of inspiration for free. Check out oym.event on Instagram and follow them right away so you can see all their new videos and battle contesters. Again, oym.event. Go in and follow their Instagram page so you can see all the new events, videos, and the inspiration for free. Thank you so much for this week's sponsor. You have obviously this very hunger for knowledge and studying and going into the science behind it. Then, how did your relationship with this subject of burnout and stress develop?
It's a hard subject to talk to, but I'll try. Is that it just happened to me. I guess, also in this decade between 30 and 40, I was gradually going toward a serious burnout. And it was, you know, the combination of perfectionism, ambition, workaholicism, having too much successes. And I don't mean, you know, let's define the word success, otherwise people think like, start measuring me if I made millions of bucks. No, it's not about that. It's about what I want myself and then achieving it, right? It's very druggy. Then it becomes a normal to be best in everything. Like, I was never hunting to be, you know, the best in television shows or to dance with famous artists. This was not my thing. But in what I was trying, I've seen achievement results. So then you're going to kind of, you know, because I'm pretty good at drawing. Or I could say some things I'm even very good at. And entrepreneurship and, you know, artistry, all those awards. And that was the same as a husband and the father. And then imagine this. This is me and you, and this is how much stress we can have. And you keep putting bricks on it. Like most people recognize when there's enough bricks. I never recognize. And then one point, that's just one brick too much. And then I burned up, like hard. Not the I need a vacation type. I need, like, everybody around me, like my boss at the company said, Andre, you're going home. Because it's the end stop for you. Because if you burn out, you don't stop yourself. You don't go like, oh, I'm so tired of this. I cannot go. No. You are so far into the, you know, so fucked up beyond the full bar done that the only thing I had then is go further. And then other people have to say, look, you're far. I couldn't sleep. I had like panic attacks. Went crushing and burning, so it made me stop for real. And I was then 37, like stop doing. I did two theater pieces at once while trying to enter a battle, while having a job, while trying, you know, I had two little kids, while teaching in three academies. It was bad. It's, and still having my Open Your Mind projects, it's too much. while still trying to figure out my schedule, how to be that one day at home because I want to be with my children, because I want to be the best dad ever, because, you know, I want to be, it's too much. And the psychological, physical damage was, I don't advise it to anybody. Arguably, 3 years later, I'm still not done. I'm still in the process of getting over that. And I am one of the happy endings. Like, you know, we work together, I'm productive again, and, you know, I could get back, I do almost everything I did, although not on the same way. And that's, there goes the wisdom of, there's an interesting topic to touch.
When we are artists and when we are dancers, it's very hard for ourselves to accept, and also for others, because people look at us as we are doing what we love. We're not in a boring 9-to-5 office job. Regularly, people with a burnout would maybe have jobs that they are dissatisfied with. So to accept that for ourselves and for others, as artists, that you probably start having signs of your body can't take it no more. That couldn't have been the easiest. And I can imagine that looking back on when you start having your signs, it wasn't clear for you either.
No, by all means, no. Look, we have to go through a couple of misconceptions, and it's good that you draw one because it's a misconception. Usually people that are working on boring jobs, they don't burn out. That's a thing we'd like to think. But in my research, I had two therapies. I've been 2 years into therapy. Then I've been into a mental coach program, and I read a brilliant book that's called From Big Bang to Burnout. I'm afraid, so it's only in Dutch because it's a Dutch, two Dutch psychologists written like a more biological book about it, but it was like mind-boggling. And in the meanwhile, I did a lot of, like, I formed a group of fellow burnout veterans, let's say, because it happened around me and it still happens a lot, much more often than people believe or would like to think. And I even organized a first symposium about it during the IBE. It's a festival 2 years ago. So I invited speakers to address burnouts in the arts and dance, because it's a hush-hush. I mean, just go invite any speaker. Nobody will say, oh yeah, and then I burned out. We still have a big shame for it. And shame is that big factor that doesn't work with us. It works against us. So trust me that I did extensive research. So what I wanted to get at is that people on the finest jobs, doing the best they can for as hard as they can, they burn out. Let's just get it out of the way. So the people that are ashamed, because it's when everybody says, yeah, but it's your dream job. And there's things like, yeah, when you do your dream job, you never have a feeling that you worked for a day. Okay, all of it is true. However, they burn out. It's the toughest, the most reliable, sensitive, hardworking people that burn out. The other ones, they go on vacation. It's, you know, the other ones say, oh, I hated this year, I hate my boss, I hate my job, I'm going on vacation or I'm taking a sick leave. They don't burn out. It's different things. On the definition, it's when you don't know that you've pushed yourself so beyond the limit that it's no longer your, what you call a limbic system. That's the, you know, the communication system between your feelings and your, like, your mind, your subconscious, and that system gives us the feeling, okay, I have enough. I don't like my job. I'm going to get fired. When people burn out, you are far beyond that. Your stress levels, your hormones are flushing and flooding you 24/7 for months and years. Probably mine was in the making for about 6 or 7 years, right? Because I understand I had before episodes, mental health episodes, and they happened between when I was studying. Because I studied at Design Academy Eindhoven, which is like one of the hardest, but why did I do it? Hardest academies there, while having a dance life, while, you know, trying to be. And then when I finished the academy, I had a mental breakdown. like a lot of my students, which was crazy. Like you finish the study, and I think a lot of people relate, and then suddenly, and then you had to get bed frame. But I was young and I could do it, right? So those misconceptions has to be get out of the way before I move on to the other subject. So you have to realize, all of us have to realize, the best burnout, not the ones that complain and always like, oh, it's so hard. And they have actually a very healthy system that warns them to stop. Because now, look, now that you hear it, it's much more logical, right? It's the ones that never complain, always smiling, but you know, you think you're still working, you have to watch them. And it's you, us, the other people have to watch them, because they will never see it coming. Like, I've never seen it coming. They are the ones that are lonely, alone, even though they might have families, have the feeling that they have to fix everybody. They're the ones that you can rely on. They will burn out.
I think that this is so, so important. I definitely feel like both myself and other people around, like, you know, you just have that feeling sometimes that I don't know if I'm heading the right direction. But since we don't always have a lot of clear examples around us, sometimes even in our age or in our circles that are willing to talk about it, or we don't know what's going on. And I think that these subjects are so, so important. And when you are now like out there and maybe talking more about it, what kind of advices do you often give dancers that maybe are feeling like, okay, I start feeling that I maybe have these signs coming up?
Okay, that's a good one. First, never do it alone. Loneliness is the one common denominator, like one thing we'll all have in common. And that's very hard to realize. So stop for a minute and think, okay, so you want to explain me. When I burn out, I was never alone. That is, I was never alone. Teaching, making theater pieces, you know, being like a little star in my little world, because my world is not that big, you know. You're never alone, but the feeling of loneliness, like, right? Unable to get through your internal, I was unable to get out of my internal cage, which is, it's a big story, which is, has to do with my, you know, upbringing and my past and present, my own character, my own, like my therapist used to say, like, I'm both sensitive and very smart. Very sensitive, very smart. And that's already, you have to learn how to live with it. But I grew up in a culture that doesn't address it at all. Yeah. By the time I had to, like, say, okay, mom, dad, because they knew I was sick, but they couldn't understand what happened. But do you go then to a doctor? I said, well, no, I've been there, but they can help that me. So they say, okay, you need some kind of pills. I said, no, I'm going to psychologist. And they're like, huh? Are you crazy? I'm like, no, it's not about, I'm not crazy. It's not about, it's like the thing, my psychologist, yeah, it's broken. So I need to go fix it. So you understand how much difference there is in generations. And later on, they understand, they're very supportive. And they, you know, now they, but I see that even my father is always like this big, strong Russian, like, so are you sick now? Do you still need like medicine or something? And I'm like, no, wait. So just to give you perspective. So the advice is then don't be alone. And what it means is ask for help.
Yeah.
So the first thing they go in therapy, I went to therapy and they say, okay, who are your friends? Who are your family? It's now time for you to ask for help. And for them, it was like, what? Russia, are you asking us for help? Because they know me as 20-year-old Iron Man, and that was the perception. I am invincible. I am Iron Man. Nothing can get me. Nothing. So people lean on me, you know, and I try to lean. I try to get with them, and then you go to this crisis process. You have to go of learning to depend and trust other people, which was really hard for me.
Yeah.
Trust your pain. Trust. Because I lost people in the process there. They didn't like that, Andre. They like the one that's unbendable, unbreakable. The one that never is angry and never, you know, sad or says, I cannot do it today because I have, you know, I'm not feeling it. Accepting vulnerability is so important. impossible to do through my advice. It would be such a bullshit to say like, oh, now listen to Drosha's advice now. No. Second, go look for professional help, okay? And I have different examples from whether it's shaman or psychotherapist, whatever you know is your way. I had different therapies until I found the one that helped me. And for 2 years, I suffered. Teresa, I suffered so much. It was the worst, hardest work to do, working on myself. When I'm talking to, I always have this thing that comes up too. Because I remember sessions of sitting next to a brilliant psychotherapist, like a brilliant guy, because I had to have a brilliant one. I had to have one that I thought like, okay, shaman's anger chair on him. He's like a Jedi, I don't know, that go through you through the step-by-step gradual process of grinding and punching through my misconceptions, perceptions. Like I talk to this and my hand go like this because it's still so difficult to work on yourself. And that would be my second advice. If you think you are there, you know, there's no energy. So how do you recognize it? There's no more energy. Are you suddenly panicking, like panic attacks or anxiety? Like, and that could grow gradually. But things that should give you pleasure gives you anxiety. There's headache, amnesia. I had all of them. Loss of, like blackouts. Like you're typing, I'm typing on a computer and I forget what am I typing about. A feeling of ants running through your head. Like I was sitting and thinking, what the hell is going on with my head? You look at screen and it's like glass in your cutting. So all of it can come together or one by one. It's actually a signal that, okay, something is wrong. Because the tough ones will go toughen out, you know. You toughen out. And I did yoga, I did dance, I did all of it, Teresa. I'm like, I was super spiritual. I at the age of 35, I managed to get into Lotus. Before I couldn't do it, even though people think I'm flexible, I was not. So those are always like misconceptions that we'd like to believe that if you do that, then it helps. But I was going through fucking Ashtanga yoga, like trying to bend the most complicated positions because I thought that should help. While here, it was like this. Like this. It was so tied up. It was so inaccessible. And to get this out, yeah, you
from inside, chances are out.
Out. Chances are you need other people, you need professional help. You need to be looking, you need to be like ding 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 to all the bells. And I really hope that you will have people around you that I also had, not everybody, but some had, that just caught me. Yeah. Like my friends picked me up with a car just to get for a drive because that was hard on me. Or you know, that to bring the meal, or the people came to my home just to have a talk, just to buy a cup of coffee. Because I really had to start a little book. Page one, I can get out of home again. Mm. Page two, I'm now busy trying to get into a bus again. Like this, how far the decimation is. How often I had to explain to people, look, I'm sorry, but I'm so, my best projects had to stop. Like I had crazy theater projects coming up, I had to like cancel. And one of the things that helped is I immediately started looking for other people that had the similar problems. So we kind of had this group, and I still call them, even though we're not the best friends sometimes, but occasionally we call each other like, hey, how are you doing though? Like, yeah. How are you doing though? Just like that. Because you know, because once you had it, you will be part of that. It's like Alcoholics Anonymous. You can talk about alcoholism, but if you had it, it's different. Then you have experienced it. At this comfort, yeah, it's precious.
One of the things that really struck me with your story was also like how people, and myself included, like if I have friends and also friends telling me like, oh, you're feeling bad, you should just stop everything and go dancing because that's the therapy. And one of the things that really struck me when you described this to me the first time was that you could not go and use dance for therapy. You had to do other things from within in order to in the future be able to dance again. And I also think that that is a misconception that we have, that dance and our creativity and our art form is going to save us always, which is obviously not true.
You know, everybody burns out. There are house mothers that never work. There are presidents that are presidents. There are artists and football players, soccer players. Look, the moral of the story, that it's not about the things you do.
Mm.
And yes, there is even a meme. There's a meme online, which I really liked. And the meme went something like that, but it's very catchy. It's like dancers saying dance is therapy and then going to the real therapists. So dancers that say, like I always said, okay, dance is part of my therapy. But I still kind of need to go to therapist, because it's true. It's part of the solution. It solves, I guess, a lot of problems, a lot of expression problems. But the thing dance was for me at that time was also part of the mask. So the best metaphor I can give, which will also work for a lot of people, is that people that burn out, they have this, there's the real them, but they live like this. And there's this mask, and they live through this mask. And it's very, very comfortable to live through this mask. And I was really comfortable. Here, I'm perfect. I'm indestructible. Mm-hmm. I'm a champion and an example for dancers from India. I coach and I make theater, blah, 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 blah. So you need to do this again to get, you know, into yourself. And that is a very, very, very tough process. And it also is for dance. Dance was not more or less me, but dance meant that I uphold this mask. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit like esoterical, but it's so true that a lot of people right now, and I know a lot of dancers that burned out. I know even some dancers that burned out and never came back, never came back to dance. Not really. Like I had to evaluate it, reborn, regurgitate, reprogram, whatever you want to call it, and it's still here because it's part of my life for too long. But I don't dance the same way anymore.
What I think is so interesting with your story is that you were able, first of all, shout out to you surviving this, because it's not something that is taken for granted. So big up your damn self. Because thanks to this and you going through all this work, we could have you back in this artistic field way sooner, and actually at all, you know, it could have ended in all different ways too. So biggest my respect and really grateful for you doing this work, even though we haven't known each other for so long. I already know enough to know that you meant a lot for a lot of people.
Thank you.
So that is something that, you know, we have to stop and highlight. I think that one of my personal views of a person that has a rich life is the person who has a lot of stories. And stories often come with making decisions that are not always that easy. And I kind of wanted to just go in a little bit to your decision making of becoming a consultant to artistic directing and actually continue to run events after you felt better. What made you decide to go back in, and what has been your approach going back in order to survive and actually manage it in a healthy way?
Yeah, that's a very good point that you're okay. From like a scientific point of view, there is and those are like current studies into burnout, because it's the biggest issue. It's like worldwide the biggest rising issue in healthcare. Like it's this incredible burnout rising. And if you are not careful with that, it can go into PTSD or PTSS. So it becomes a post-traumatic stress disorder. And your trauma is what you think caused it. So if people think that their work caused it, it's becoming traumatic to work. If they think their relationship caused it, that relationship becomes traumatic. Well, the truth is not like that. it's not really, not, none of it caused it. Actually, people themselves caused it. And it's very hard, like on a philosophical level, oh yeah, sure, everybody understands it. But what it really means, Teresa, it's so hard to understand that you, I caused it. I myself caused it. The way I approached every project, every bit. So I have to relearn. And for that, it's very important not to stop completely. So that was like the first thing, because when I started the guy, Dave, so much shout out to him, who used to be my boss and a colleague at the place where I worked, he said, like, this is the number. You're going tomorrow to a therapist. Like, he called him and I called him and I was like, so he's seen it. My therapist was experiencing it as we go. And giving me very fast, like, hard, like, this is, why are you going to do that now? And one of them says, he said, do not stop completely. Because if you do, if you call Turk, if you go completely there and you stay too long, that's so hard. So I tried to somehow keep, okay, so I gave away the projects and a couple of weeks I really had to, not even, yeah, I think 2 weeks. 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I did nothing. Because also the problem is when burnout happens, so you kind of realize it, then you're, for the first time in years, the stress hormones, the adrenaline, noradrenaline, all those hormones, I go like, done. And what happens is my immune system gave up. So I, first time in my life, and it was June, and it was like 30 degrees, I had angina, like a throat. So bad that I had to take antibiotics to get it away. Never in my life did I had it. Because don't forget that high stress levels are very good for immune system. Yeah. Although people think that it's not like that. That's why when nobody gets ill when they're like running around, have to fix project. They get ill when they're done.
Yeah.
And then you get all of your like this, I'm no longer at survival mode, and then you become ill. So those, a couple of weeks, I had to go through it, and it went together with this complete destruction of my own self, which thinks I'm a loser. I will never be able to do this. What am I without my work and identity? I'm a bad father. I'm a bad human being. I want to fucking kill myself. And all depression, all of that goes very compact and very hard pressing on you. And then he advised me, like, if you can, like, do one thing per day, even if it's 45 minutes, right? If you're into theater, just still watch something that you loved. My saving was Star Trek. Now, you can laugh about it, and I don't mind if people start laughing, because I could not watch anything. It was too much. Because, like, imagine that all of your feelings are, like, twisted outside. News were too much. Long conversation, my head went like this. But I watched Netflix, you know, Star Trek, Next Generation, the Deep Space Nine, because they were like 45 minutes, there were, nothing happens there. You know, it's like high-tech mumbo jumbo, science fiction, I love all of that. And then I tried to read the email, not longer than that. Turn on the telephone because it's always out. And then check on my project, just how they go. And there was a clock, like 45 minutes a day, then 1 hour a day. And then the moment, and we matched it with my therapist and my coaches. So I said, okay, are you ready? If you're ready. And I was slowly getting like, okay, I'm ready to do more. I'm ready to go to 1 hour. And I think between 1 month or 2 months, I was already working one day a week and making work out of the process. So first I was trying to go into a lot of cliches, give in, spiritual stuff. It doesn't work for me. I made it into work. So it's very important for a person to find a way that works for them. I even remember my girlfriend at that time thought that I was kind of obsessed in making it work, but it helped me a lot. I had a listening session. If I was too much in anxiety, I had like guided meditations ready, you know, at the YouTube. So I found great guys. And because of that, my mind kind of had destruction. not to think about killing yourself, you know, like, oh, never going to get out of it, but into, okay, Andre, you're making it work, even if it's really bad. I stopped smoking there. Like my therapist said, no, you're not going to do it, you're crazy. Please smoke, because, you know, it helps. I said, no. And I did it. I think by month two, I stopped smoking because it gave my feeling of accomplishment back. Because when identity is about accomplishing things, so you suddenly cannot accomplish anything, those victories, those little, you know, things were really great. And that I all got from my friends and colleagues. Yeah. So it's not something I made up. But they're like, okay, what are the little victories? What are the small things? And slowly and gradually going back, but never going to this bottom line. You go to here, not to here, to here, and then coming back. And then the process is like this. You're going here, and you go up again, back again. You go up, and you back again. And it happened a lot. That's why I told you I'm still not done. Yeah. And then go. And I was here, right? This. And then also accepting. That's one of the best advices. Like, accept. You're going to have it again. And I had it again. Not that severe, because I was ready. And I was already happening. It, like, accepted. It's going to happen again.
Yeah. Wow. It's a journey. And I mean, I haven't had a burnout myself, but like everyone says that, you know, that's a lifelong journey too, you know, just as it is to accept ourselves and to be on this self-love journey. It's a part of that. And maybe people who have gone through a burnout just need to do it, you know, more strategically.
Teresa, I would say be careful. I had to do it like this. But I would like to stress this. Okay, whoever does it needs to find their way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it has, this is, you don't want to get to this line in the end of your, on the bottom of our screen. Like, keep it like this. Otherwise, you develop PTSS. And then you have to fight a whole different demon. Then it becomes a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like we can talk for days about this. I just kind of also want to get into one of the projects that you are running currently right now, because you are actually managing an online event, festival, competition, which is, it feels like it has, you know, your name on it. It's an experimental type of conceptual event. Tell me about how this idea came to mind and what it is actually. Open your mind.
Yeah, that's, I was thinking, you're saying like how the idea came to mind. Well, open your mind. Well, first, thank you for great words, but it's not that big. It's very nice, but it's actually a very compact idea. And just to give people perspective, Open Your Mind is an international festival that's completely dedicated to experimental dance, right? And it's not my idea. It's an idea of another Andre, actually from Moscow. So I have I think he lives now in St. Petersburg, who I have to always credit for inventing that, having the idea to organize something only for, you know, experimental. Because before in the scene, it was always a subcategory. It's nice to add, you know, if pop, lock, whatever, dancehall, rocking, breaking. Let's put experimental to it. And he thought, fuck, let's do it. Let's do it like for real. And then he invited me as a judge. And I said, okay, if we're going to be doing it for real first time, then let's reinvent the event. Not just saying, okay, it's another battle for categories. And then I'm not going to go too deep in it because the internet is full of it. You know, people can go on YouTube, can go on Instagram, follow our page, self-promotion, Ching Chang, openyourmind.event. Go to like just YouTube, Open Your Mind Battle, and then you'll see our crazy after movies. You see some battles. The idea was innovate the idea of battle itself. And we fused theater with battle like that. So it means kind of we blur the line between what's theater, what's not, because we thought, okay, that's the only way to kind of get you expanded. If I challenge you to say, okay, Teresa, now it's a challenge. It just doesn't dance, but I want to challenge you to, get this blanket behind you, right? See the picture on it, and what does it do to you? So yeah. In theatrical process, it's quite normal to, visualize and improvise based on assignment. But in battles, that was fresh. Once again, Open Your Mind was not the first one. I think Hip Hop Games were even before. It's a French event. So I want to credit them as well. I always credit my people. Remember, I'm a researcher. Due diligence. And I know some experience in Japan and France. And in the Netherlands, it was NEDA and I think Jordana, maybe. They did also a little experiment called Exploring Battle or Explosion Battle. We had always like people coming up with a similar idea. What we did, we just branded it better. Like we really prepared it. We immediately organized Russia and the Netherlands. Now we have Russia, Japan, UK, Germany, Netherlands, again, Netherlands of IBE and the Helen. And we were busy expanding to France before pandemic. And I'm also busy going to the US of A. Busy. And the idea is simple. You go, what's event? You do innovate. You expand it. So the after movies had to be artistic. And that's where like the battles itself had to have an artistic quality. Then we expanded it to pre-parties with like, we made mixed party with battle with, I don't know what. I can't even describe it. I'm just very proud that we do it. And because of pandemic, obviously, we could not continue. Because the best way would be to experience it. And thought, okay, let's do an online event. Because we can. And let's see where is the innovation in that medium. So if you go now on openyourmind.event and you will see what happens there. The good thing happens. Most people react like that. And then I think, yes. Because when everybody's like, oh, that's nice, it's done. It's, it's nice.
When I went into the Instagram, I just want to highlight how I was like, what is this? And and why haven't I been in a part of this? That was my second thought. What the hell is this? Why am I not in it? So, but it's running right now. It's like currently.
Yes. As we speak, depending, of course, when you air the podcast, yeah. It will be either just done because we're in a final round or we might still run it in a couple of days, we'll announce the top three, but we will put all the works online. And here's the break. Here's the idea. So what if you do an online event, right? Which is about breaking all the rules of online events. So I followed everything, like, the battles, and it's kind of all logical. They say, okay, send your 1 minute round, right? Which is cool. You put your dance on it. Don't edit it because it's cheating. Don't put, this is how it should be, it's supposed to be. And then you see everybody like goes in their room before that white wall, do their dance. And that's what you, and I was like, what if we, because, okay, we're looking for boundaries breaking. Okay, please cheat and use complete power of the medium. Yeah. So why? We want your presentation, edit, go do weird stuff. And as an example, we created two characters of me and our host. Because I hope you've seen, because it's like the announcement, we kind of give commentary like, Beavis and Butthead, but we'll also explain with this how we want like inspiration to the assignments, because it's not all just send your freaky shit. It is all like, look at our clip. There's always a deep meaning in there, and can you transform it into work so the judges can judge it? Otherwise, it's unjudgeable. Yeah. And that's it. And then now people request for us to start a YouTube channel. Just based on those two characters. That's so fun. It's like we were at office and everybody brainstorming. And I said like, yeah, but okay, the only way to make sure people understand what you mean is to show how it's done.
Yeah.
And we start making up this weird, funny, abstract, surrealistic things. And it turned out to be freaking funny. And then people share their explanations just as much, or they have maybe even more attention to them than the participants. And the participants picked it up. And I was so glad. I was like, oh my God, what will happen if they... Because it's always like scary to do new things. Teresa, new things is scary. Innovation is very scary, real innovation, because you know people will not understand it.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be understandable. Open your mind in the beginning was also not understandable. Like the battle, people came to it like this, like, what are they doing there?
Yeah.
And it's like you reacted, oh, that's interesting, but what is the, how do you, what? And then we do it already for 5 years in 5 countries, right? Now people understand it, and people organize a lot of events in similar fashion. That's how it works. Before, nobody get it. Then, oh, that's how you do it. Like they, a lot of organizers travel to open your mind, like this.
Oh, huh? Yeah.
Huh? And then half a year later, I see first experimental event in Slovakia, or you know, Denmark, or I don't know. So that's very cool, and I'm very proud of it. But yeah. Then online, yeah, what do you want to say?
Yeah, no, because I just wanted to come back to that. Again, it's about that filling that gap of like, okay, how can we bridge over, you know, areas that haven't been touched yet, and how can we push those boundaries? And I think that that again, like, leaves a legacy to be on. Like, now you can develop in your own countries and do your own things with it.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. And going back to online event, so we pushed it again in that sense that people often even react on what are people sending. Like, I have reactions in my DM, what is this crazy stuff people doing? They don't even dance. And I say, like, sure, but we didn't ask them to dance, right? The idea is to use your medium to make 1 minute theater show, and then use the power of it. So if you want to invite 10 people, you invite 10 people, right? It's all good. And I'm very glad to see the results so far. And once again, we did it small. We didn't like blow off all over the world, because it's not for everybody. And I know that a lot of dancers that wanted to enter even didn't. Like in the beginning, it was really exciting because people didn't understand what they have to do, right? And they were like watching and looking. So what's the point of this? Oh shit, it's open your mind. So it's gonna be something different again. And I'm glad it is. So we would love to keep coming it back, and people will perfect it. Just like people, when once they understood how this open your mind life works, keep perfecting it. They will understand how to do this. Yeah.
It's so crazy. And I feel like I can't wait to see more what you have in store, and to see what the next, you know, the 40 plus years are going to bring you from a creative standpoint. This is funny. Like, I feel like if we can talk about this for days and days about life experience and reflections. And in the end of my interviews, I always have something called fill in the blanks, which is the hardest part of the interview. It's basically, I'm starting with a sentence and you're going to end it with one word or the end of a sentence. And this is hard because most people want to space out, and we're going to try to keep it short. So let's see. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Awesome. Okay. One thing I like learning about right now is?
Quietness.
All right. Love that. People have to tune in to understand what that means. Love it. Number two, if you could pick up one new skill right away, it would be?
DJing. I love drum and bass. That's the only like drum and bass DJ. Yeah.
Some drum and bass jungle party is what I could also see myself doing right now. Okay. One thing, habit, thought, or feeling that I am in a process of letting go.
Blind ambition.
Blind ambition. In a process of letting go, blind ambition. Ooh, definitely, that could be definitely a topic of a book. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'll get back. Let's do it once a year. I'll get back next year and I will continue the talk.
All right. What music makes your soul move right now?
Liquid drum and bass.
Liquid drum and bass. Oof, I need to Google that right away after this interview. Shit. What is something that you have never done that you want to do within the next year?
DJ drum and bass.
Okay, well, that's good because you're going to do it. Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I want to for a long time.
Okay. Yeah, we will talk next year and we will see about it. I'm going to hold you accountable. Okay. The best advice I have ever heard.
Two words, okay? It's impossible to answer one, okay? Sorry, judge. Give me two words. Damn.
These are some of the most hardest questions I have done so far in this podcast, and I thought you would be the person for it. So I'm shooting wild shots right now.
It's good, but you know, normally I could just on the roll give great advices I've heard,
or and like a quote or something that.
Yeah. It's. I guess it's your assignment that make it so short. It would be something like get ready to let go, because at one point. You have to let go.
You have to. I think that's a great advice. Okay. Side question about this. What is the biggest no you have ever said in your life?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Getting back in drugs, no. Getting back. I'm honest with it. You know, I've tried all kinds of shit. But that thing is no, never again. Not once, not maybe at the party, no. No weed, no fun stuff. This is a no. This thing here doesn't do well with drugs.
That's a good one. And on the flip side, I want to ask, what is the scariest yes you have ever said?
Damn.
I know. I'm hitting you hard.
Yeah. Because I have to choose. I have to choose. All of it is so scary. God, Teresa, come on.
I could change it to what is one of your most scariest?
Yeah, I'm getting there now because this failed. Now I'm trying to get into what is one of the scary things. I went to India somewhere at the end of the most healing process. Okay, I was not ready yet going through burnout. And I went to India. That was really scary. Like getting out of house was a challenge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then just like, let's say I was still somewhere in therapy, just finished maybe. And then they say, yes, sir, come to New Delhi. And that is a podcast on itself, that trip. So.
I want to hear that story. You know, I'm a sucker for stories. So we're going to take that one next time. Okay, this one is also going to be so hard. I'm so sorry. What is one of the biggest learning moments you have had since you became a father?
Trying to be perfect father is very, very bad.
I'm gonna leave it at light because I'm not a parent yet. So I think I'm going to understand this. Even better when I'm a
that's not a good lesson for your kids. It's not good for yourself. And I am such a better father now that I'm not, you know, I see them now. I see this perfect parents, you know, like perfect, gotta be perfect. This gotta be perfect. Now I'm just savage with my kids and it's so fun. Running, jumping, whatever.
Processing of letting go. Coming back to that. What is one of the biggest fears you have ever overcome?
That I failed my children because I'm divorced.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's grown-up stuff.
I can tell you as a child of divorced parents, in the end, having parents that are unhappy with their lives is way worse than having them divorced.
That's what I'm telling myself.
It is.
Yeah.
It
is. It's a year three podcast.
It's a year three podcast.
Yeah, topic divorced, divorced dancers. Yeah.
If we're going to go through this, you have to start your own podcast too, so we can nail these subjects together, man.
No. I'm good. I'm good like this. Enough of my life. I cannot, no podcast. Not yet.
What is the one thing you wished more people knew about?
How critical thinking works. My God, yes. What does it really mean that you are a critical thinker? Fourth podcast. We got the topics. Like, what can I talk for hours about?
Love it. I am feeling the most true to myself when...
This is the hardest by far. Like, by far.
Oh, for the people who don't see the screen, he's literally rubbing his head.
Yeah.
Leaving his eyes in his hands.
Yeah, I'm already... face. In this new evening lighting, I look like some kind of vampire shadow because of the light. And now I'm squeezing my face because you ask me one of the biggest existential questions you can ask to an analytical scientist.
I thought you were going to say when I listen to Liquid Drum and Bass, but I mean...
No. I'm immediately in the existential problem of, you know... When is it me? When is it not me? Is it perceiving of me? You know, is it, you know, the borders between your own identity and of other people's? Okay.
Okay. One moment when you feel really good being with yourself.
No, exactly. It's something else. Being with myself. It's very cliche. When I'm amongst friends, that's it. Just having a good time, and it's not, you know, it's nothing that I have to prove or develop or, my God, it's so nice sometimes. Could be also family, but it's something, you know, that come on, like dinner, and it doesn't even have to be fancy, couple of drinks. And we're having giggles or talking about subjects that are serious. And I'm just like, that's nice. That's home. Yeah.
Last question. Give me one boundary that people should push through in order to get out of their comfort zone. Oh, he's starting going in circles now. It's getting bad.
I will go not with the most important, okay? Let me go. I will cheat out. I will not say fear, because it is fear. It's always fear. It's always fear, your primal fear that you don't want to even admit, because it's like comfort zone. No, it's not my thing. Comfort zone. The music is wrong. Comfort zone. The clothes are wrong. Comfort zone. I never dance on shoes. It's all fear. Let me go a little bit more. You know, something like, it's that you should let or try to let go of the shame, which is another thing, that you are ashamed of it. Most people won't even, like, those two things, they will never even admit that they're scared and ashamed. Because comfort zone are created for you to feel safe and proud, okay? Not scared and ashamed. So do things that shame you, just to spit on it. Just to say, like, fuck it, I did it. You know, I did something stupid that people think about me, blah, 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 blah. That will be better even than fear, because those are connected. Like that, they're connected together.
Love that. Definitely making a list of both fear and things that I would be ashamed of. Admitting to everyone that singing is one of those points where, like, I definitely feel that there's something I have to conquer one day. One day. We all have them. We all have
go,
them.
Go, Teresa. Go conquer.
Thank you so much, Zrosha. I'm saying it as well. Like, we need to have more episodes. If this is not ending up on, like, only on my YouTube channel, I hope that we can have it on your future YouTube channel. With you, open your mind. Where can we find you? Who do you want to love bomb? Is there any projects we should look out for? The mic is yours.
Just Drosha and you'll find all kinds of stuff. Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. But I would advise follow openyourmind.event. This is my love work. And a lot of people next to me, it's not only me. It's actually us. And I'm gladly share it with you. I hope to bump in. I'm a nice guy. I always talk. I always help. And I'm also not the only one. There's more us. And that's why I want to give a shout out to all the people that are there in the hip-hop culture, in the urban culture, broad, living the each one, teach one mentality. We are it. We are, you know, I don't identify myself as Jew or Christian. I don't identify myself as a Russian or not even, I don't know, okay, I'm a man, male, but I am part of that culture. It's my identity. And that's why those podcasts and all this, it has to be done. So a big shout out to you. Big shout out to my whole team at Open Your Mind. And I want to congratulate Don and Mama with their 20th anniversary. That's what I want to do. So if anybody doesn't know, it's a pioneering Dutch theater company that did great work personally for a lot of people. My theater, Mom and Dad, Bart and Anita. Love you. It's your year. Enjoy.
Oh, thank you so, so much. I really hope to see you soon. I know we're having some upcoming, you know, theater pieces together. So I really, really hope to see you soon, soon, soon. And until then, have the best time ever and celebrate that for
you. I do.
Awesome. Thank you.